For centuries, the Chinese tales of great, scaly, man-eating monsters with fiery breath were thought of as nothing more than myths and fanciful imaginings. Old sailors would tell of them and would write, "Here be dragons," on their maps when they saw a land they didn't at all like the look of. And then, at the beginning of this century, a pioneering Dutch aviator was attempting to island hop his way along the Indonesian archipelago to Australia when he had engine trouble and had to crash land his plane on the tiny island of Komodo. When he went searching for water, he found a strange wide track on the sandy shore, followed the track, and suddenly found himself confronted with something that he also did not at all like the look of. It appeared to be a great, scaly, man-eating monster, fully 10 feet long. What he was looking at was the Komodo dragon lizard, which is now widely thought to be the true origin of the Chinese dragon myth. It is a violent man-eater. It is scaly. And though it doesn't actually breathe fire, it does have the worst breath of any creature known to man. After spending 3 months surviving on an island infested with these creatures, the aviator was eventually rescued. And when he returned home, nobody, of course, believed a word of it. The dragons are found on just a few small islands in the middle of the Indonesian archipelago, which stretches like a jeweled necklace from the coast of Southeast Asia 3,000 miles into the Pacific Ocean. Mark Kawardine and Douglas Adams have rashly decided to look for these creatures themselves. They arrive, first of all, on the island of Bali, considered by many to be the most beautiful place on Earth, particularly if you enjoy the sight of thousands of Australians getting drunk on the beach, and discover that all their carefully made travel arrangements have once again gone completely haywire. They find themselves confronted with a travel agent that they don't at all like the look of.
Okay, we've come all the way from England for this, and you have not reserved our flights. You have not confirmed our flights.
No, we already confirmed it.
It says requested.
When it's confirmed, it says OK. When it's requested, it says RQ. And on the tickets, it says RQ.
So I will explain to you everything if you just shut off of your tape recorder.
No. No.
You have to switch off that. You have to explain to me first your reason, because I have also the right to stop it. Now, I'm quite an influenced person here. I can make a special flight for you if you can be nice to us.
Okay.
You see? Okay. I can do everything for you if you can be kind to me.
Okay.
If you are rude to me, I can be more rude. You will get problem. But now, I will give my power, at least by tomorrow he will fly to Komodo.
Labuan Bajo.
Yeah.
Yes.
You have your plane?
No, we're still trying to find it. We're trying to find somebody who knows about it. You know, it's been a brain speculation.
Labuan Bajo.
Yeah.
Oh boy, this is a complete mess. We've got to get to Labuan Bajo tonight, which is the nearest we can get to Komodo by plane. God knows we're going to make it. God knows where our baggage is or anything. Tomorrow, assuming we manage to get to Labuan Bajo, we've got a long and I think grueling boat ride out to Komodo Island itself. And I hope we can at least get a decent night's sleep.
Labuan Bajo is something of an endurance test. Being woken at dawn by the cockerels is not in itself a problem. The problem arises when the cockerels get confused as to when dawn actually is. they suddenly explode into life, squawking and screaming at about 1 o'clock in the morning. At about 1:30, they eventually realize their mistake and shut up, just as the major dogfights of the evening are getting underway. These usually start with a few minor bouts between the more enthusiastic youngsters, and then the full chorus of heavyweights weigh in with a fine impression of what it might be like to fall into the pit of hell with the London Symphony Orchestra. It's then quite an education to learn that two cats fighting can make easily as much noise as 40 dogs. It's a pity to have to learn this at 2:15 in the morning, but then the cats have a lot to complain about in Labuan Bajo. They all have their tails docked at birth, which is supposed to bring good luck, though presumably not to the cats. Once the cats have finished reflecting on the injustices of life, the cockerels suddenly get the idea that it's dawn again and let rip. It isn't, of course. Dawn is still 2 hours away, and you still have the delivery van horn-blowing competition to get through and the major divorce proceedings that have suddenly erupted in the room next door. At last, things calm down and your eyelids begin to slide thankfully together in the blessed pre-dawn hush. And then, about 5 minutes later, the cockerels finally get it right.
We actually seem to be on our way. I must admit, I've been really worried about this trip because everyone I spoke to before leaving for Indonesia told me that these seas are the roughest anywhere in the world. And I had visions of riptides and whirlpools and enormous waves, and there's apparently a raging moat around Komodo itself. And I've been sort of thinking that this might be my last sea trip ever.
Komodo Island is looming up ahead of us now. The sea colour around us is changing from the heavy inky black that it's been all the way over, and it's a much lighter blue now. But the island is rising out of it in a most forbidding way. Out there on the right, you can see a spur going down to the sea that looks like lizard's feet. The hills undulate in a way that's like the great heavy folds of a lizard's skin.
It's got at least 3,000 of these man-eating dragons, and there are so many poisonous snakes, they reckon there are more per square meter than anywhere else in the world. And even in the sea, it looks very inviting, but there's no way I'm going swimming because there are sharks and scorpion fish and all kinds of stinging and biting creatures lurking underneath. Goodness knows why we chose to come here. We must be mad.
We seem to be heading away from the village at this point.
Oh, well, the place we're staying is about half an hour's walk away from the village, called Lo Ho Liang.
See the jetty, Mark? There's a boat near it, and there's a little sort of a shack behind it. We're moored up against the jetty now, unloading things. We've just unloaded all our cases and Colin the 400mm lens. And here come the chickens. This is 5 chickens, yes, that have grave misgivings, it has to be said, about what the outcome of this expedition is going to be. This is probably going to be our meal tonight. And this is probably tomorrow's breakfast.
Hello.
I can imagine I'm just going to be eating rice and pineapple for the rest of the week.
One of the more disturbing aspects of travel in remote areas is the necessity of taking your food with you in non-perishable form. despite the fact that an Indonesian island chicken has probably had a much more natural and pleasant life than one raised on a battery farm in England, people who wouldn't think twice about buying something oven-ready become much more upset about a chicken that they've been on a boat with. So there's probably buried in the Western psyche a deep taboo about eating anything you've been introduced to socially. As it happened, these particular chickens were not destined to be eaten by Mark and Douglas after all. A rather more swift and dramatic fate awaited them only minutes after the boat had landed at Komodo.
What's happened is the Komodo dragon has just attacked one of our chickens.
It's got one in its claws at the moment.
The dragon's gone up, made off with one of our chickens, and it's throttling it slowly in the bush there. It's up on the bank.
The other three chickens.
The other chickens. Well, we won't get the one back, but the dragon's got that one.
Swallowed the chicken.
Has it actually swallowed
it? It's just finishing off swallowing. There's just a bit of tail feather sticking out of its mouth. Okay, this is the chalet that we're expected to be sleeping in. It's made of wood. It stinks like mad. And there's so many other animals living in here with us. It's just incredible. There's a gecko on the ceiling, tiny one. There's plenty of flies and so on for it to feed on, that's for sure. Let's just have... Oh, crap, can you hear that? Can you hear the scuttling? There's a hole up in the loft here. Let's just have a look. God, there's an enormous number of geckos up there on all the beams going across in the sort of attic. There's that scuttling again. That's definitely rats. Let's have a look in this room over here. Wow, look at the size of this thing living in here.
It's a gecko.
About 8 inches long.
Extraordinary looking thing.
It's got pink spots and what are the other spots? Turquoise?
With the little lumps going all the way down it. It looks like it's made of rubber, doesn't it?
It does, right. It's got enormous eyes. Oh, this is one of the beds and it's just covered in rat droppings. I'm certainly not sleeping in that room tonight, that's for sure. There's that rustling again up in the loft. Toilets are revolting. They're absolutely awful. Filthy, dirty. There's cobwebs and spiders all over them. Floors soaking wet. There's a bat. Did you see the bat come in?
No.
Flew in straight out again. There's geckos all over the ceiling in there. There's another big spider. Just have a look out on the balcony. Balcony is a very grand word for this.
Mark?
Oh, there's a... Hi.
I think we should sleep on the boat.
There seems to have been a bit of an information breakdown here. We struggled our way from Bali to Labuan Bajo, found ourselves a boat, made the long journey across what is meant to be one of the most treacherous and dangerous bits of sea in the world, which was admittedly like a mill pond when we were on it, under the impression that this was the only way to get to Komodo. Now we are here, the first thing we find is a helicopter pad, for heaven's sake. And a party of retired Americans on a tourist day trip.
Take a look at these binoculars.
You know, with these, it's the size I really thought we'd be seeing.
We had also understood that once we were here, we would have to go and barter with the villagers for the use of one of their dead goats, stake it out on the ground, and then hide up a tree to see if the dragons would come. What we've found is more like a gladiator ring. There is a gully in which a number of dragons sit around all day waiting to be fed, and overlooking the gully is a sort of wooden bandstand to watch it from. I'm afraid I find this all rather stomach-turning. There's a kind of pulley system with a blue nylon rope and a meat hook. And there is a goat brought along specially for the occasion. A live goat. The wardens take the goat to a discreet spot behind the bandstand, slit its throat, and then winch its body down to the dragons, who, if they are not too full from yesterday's performance, will slowly lumber up to it and rip its entrails out. Now we're going down into the gully where the dragons lie in wait to be fed every day. Oh, there's a pig over there. It's got the sense to stay away from this particular scene, which is actually quite unpleasant, as there are mutilated remains of a goat hanging from this blue nylon rope down among the dragons who've just been ripping its insides out. We've just been told that it's the mating season, which means they're less interested in eating, but we haven't seen them be more interested in anything else.
Funny, they don't seem to be very hungry at the moment, but you see the young one over there just on the far side of the gully. See, it's really cautious about the two adults right down in front of us. Usually a dragon of that sort of age, it's only about 2 or 3 feet long, must be less than a year old, I would think, would spend its life up in the trees eating geckos and insects and so on, well away from the adults, because these two adults down here would eat that baby at the slightest chance they get. So the baby's keeping a wary eye on them all the time. And if it goes too close, the dragons will eat it. They'll eat absolutely anything they can get their teeth into. They'll eat one another if they can. No trouble, an adult Komodo dragon will eat another adult if it can get away with it. A single one could bring down a water buffalo. It'll grab the water buffalo by the back of its leg. And the theory is it'll break the Achilles tendon, so the buffalo's leg just buckles. And it'll kill it on the ground. So you can imagine what it could do to a person. There's a famous story of from a few years ago of a party of Swiss tourists who were here to look at the dragons. They were on a cruise ship and they'd been dropped off for the day. And they'd been walking quite a lot during the day. And the rest of the group went down into a gully like this one and left an elderly man who was a member of the group up on the top, I mean, more or less like where we're sitting now. And when they came back, the man had gone, and all they could find, they searched the whole area for the rest of the day, all they could find were his binoculars and his glasses, and the assumption is that a dragon got him. These buggers will eat a cement mixture if they can get hold of one. You know, in fact, in the village, the people there have to put stones and sharp bits of coral all over their graveyards because the dragons come in and dig up the corpses and eat them.
I think this is probably one of the most revolting things I've ever seen. There's a dragon about 2 feet in front of me, a very big one, and I should probably be very nervous at this point, except I think I feel more sick than anything else. The dragon is clearly not particularly interested in a very large piece of goat, sort of green intestines hanging from the dragon's jaws, and it's sort of covered with saliva and there's blood all over the place.
Did you smell the breath of this one right next to us here? It's revolting. They've got these horrible bacteria that stay in their mouths all the time, and if you get bitten by one, even if you can get away, the wound will fester and there's no antidote.
The smell is quite overpowering. It's very hot. And the stench is just unbelievable.
Well, a second one has just appeared on the side of this stadium. It's actually bigger than the first one we saw, but it must be about 7 feet long, even bigger, I would guess. Coming straight towards us, it's now about 30 yards away. It's interesting, its tongue is a much whiter colour than I'd expected, because all the stories you hear is that the tongue is a yellowy-orange colour. That's one of the reasons it got the reputation of being a dragon. But this tongue, to me, doesn't look at all like fire.
The way it walks is extraordinary. It's very sinister, isn't it? A great sort of...
Great
slapping down each foot as it comes towards you.
The first one we saw that was here when we arrived was about 5 years old, and they can live until they're about 20 to 30 years. These look big, but even these are going to grow another 2 or 3 feet.
Looking at the way the skin falls behind the head, around the neck and behind the feet, it's rather the way that chain mail would fall. It's got that kind of very, very sort of heavy folding quality. It's a scaly skin, a very dull browny grey. I mean, those are big, serious eyes. I mean, when it looks at something, it's not messing about.
One particular scientist studying the parasites living on the dragons, he used to wait until they were asleep, and they sleep really deeply, apparently, and then tiptoe up to them and pick off ticks and other parasites from the skin. And apparently most of the time he managed to do it without the dragons waking up. The few times they did wake up, I think he had to move really quickly.
Boy, that is a huge tail. I mean, apparently he uses the tail as a weapon. I mean, a swipe from that, I think, would see you off.
You know they have two penises?
What?
Two things, they're sort of equivalent of our penis, called hemipenis.
Sort of spare one for the weekend.
It's almost like that, because they use one, and when they've ejaculated 3 or 4 times, they give that one a rest and carry on with the other one.
But how do the females take to this?
Well, I don't know. It's not only the fact that the males have got two penises each, it's the fact that the female dragons are outnumbered by 3.5 to 1.
So I suppose you could look at penises per female dragon. They must lead a very full social life, the female dragons.
Komodo village is built on the beach, and on either side of us are houses built on stilts. Most of them, like the one we're passing here on the left, are made of bamboo bound together, and the thatched roofs on top, thatched pitched roofs, and then a wide wooden staircase which leads up into the living quarters, which are, you know, around about head height.
It's a real hive of activity. Say there are children everywhere, there are goats and chickens pecking around in the sand under all the houses.
Dari grup BBC, London. Mau ketemu sama Bapak.
Tahun dah nggak lera?
Tahun lalu ya.
Tahun 8.
This is the father of the boy who was eaten by the Komodo dragon. He says that the tragedy happened 2 years ago. His son, who was 6 years old, was sitting on the steps of his house. Suddenly, he heard his son shrieking. He came running to drag his child from the mouth of the Komodo. He was too late. In 10 minutes, his son was dead.
Papa lihat kamu.
Apakah orang-orang kampung membantu ibu?
Abis saya sudah di dalam pondok baru saya bertanya baru ada orang.
This lady was attacked by a Komodo dragon 3 years ago. She said she didn't hear the Komodo approaching, and it bit her on her left leg, just here above the knee. She said it was very painful. She tried to escape but kept falling as she ran to her house. There was no one nearby to help her. The Komodo chased but wasn't fast enough to catch her. She was taken to hospital and it took 2 or 3 months for the wound to heal. She's very frightened to work in the fields now. But she has no choice.
All the literature says that nobody has managed to survive such an attack. Either they die at the time because of the wounds themselves, or septicemia sets in afterwards. And in fact, there was one famous case where a tourist was bitten on the leg on Komodo, and the bacteria in the dragon's mouth set to work on his wound, and he actually died back home in France 2 years later. So this woman really is remarkable for having survived.
There are now 5,000 Komodo dragons left. But it seems quite possible, allowing for normal fluctuations in population levels, that that is roughly how many there have always been. They only occur on a handful of small islands, and no one is very clear about how they came to be there in the first place. And there is an understandable body of opinion among the locals which holds that 5,000 of these creatures is quite enough, thank you very much. And if it weren't for the tourism, they'd probably feel that they could make do with quite a few less. It's perhaps a sad irony that tourism, which so often completely disrupts the culture it affects, is often the one thing that guarantees the survival of the rare wildlife in an area. It's quite clear, for instance, that it's tourist dollars that are saving the mountain gorillas of Rwanda from extinction and protecting the tigers in India. Now that there's a helipad on Komodo and regular day trippers, it will probably not be long before you can check into the Komodo Hilton and pick up your dead goat from the concierge. And perhaps that is the price we have to pay. Survival is a question of economics, and the local people need money for their own survival. If the tigers, gorillas, and the dragons are to thrive, then the local people too must be kept happy. And counting.